Director Mike Dossett from Kentucky Emergency Management, who I would also like to wish the best in his retirement, called to see if we could put together a go team and go to assist Mayfield because of the devastation he was hearing about in the State Emergency Operations Center. I immediately began to have conversations with Deputy Mayor Ellen Hessen, Chief Doug Rechtenwald from Pleasure Ridge Park, and Lieutenant Colonel Rick Atkinson with Louisville Fire. And it was determined we could rapidly begin the planning process for an immediate deployment, but we must wait to make sure that the storm passed our area and verification that we were not needed locally. When the storm passed, four of us got on the road along with members of Louisville Fire, Louisville EMS and MetroSafe, St. Matthews Fire Department, and Anchorage Middletown Fire Department, who were directly behind us as they put their personnel and resources together. Our ideal was to put structural collapse assets together and in the area, along with communications and fire and EMS resources that could assist throughout the city that where resources were already busy. We made contact with local emergency management personnel to let them know we were on our way. Along the trip as well, we also requested that the Lexington Fire Department be activated to assist us. The Lexington Fire Department and the City of Louisville resources have trained for many years together for situations like this. One thing I do want to mention, when we arrived at the scene, it was totally obvious that local responders who were there before us were true lifesavers.
Each agency will receive a proclamation with the City of Louisville honoring you for their quick and professional response to the devastating tornado damage to people and property and loss of life in Western Kentucky in December. Without hesitation, these first responders stepped up to help fellow Kentuckians in crisis, displaying commendable bravery and commitment to service. They collaborated with local and federal agencies to rescue survivors and to restore order to lives turned upside down during this historic weather event. So our city expresses its gratitude to each first responder of Louisville Metro Emergency Services, in this case, for their compassionate service and for always answering the call. So each one of those is customized for you all.
So I was a sergeant in the Army. I have been out of the military since 2001. Although I got out of the military in 01, did not start coming to the VA until 2016. A lot of female veterans don't realize they can come to the VA hospital for their care.
I've been with the VA for 20 years. When we were taking care of women, we had them going one place to get their primary care. They might go to another place to have a mammogram. They would have to go to a different clinic to get their GYN care. So that's all changed. We've been able to bring this clinic together and have essentially one-stop shopping for their services.
Women sometimes feel forgotten as veterans, and we have to go above and beyond to help them not feel forgotten. So if they want to come here and not only see a designated women's health provider, but also see a designated women's health provider who's female, they have that option.
You walk in and it feels womanly. It feels, you know, like it's for a lady. You have female providers that understand you, you can talk to, I can have all of my things done in this one spot.
We're very aware of what may have taken place during their training. When we train our women's health providers, we make that a big important part of the training that they go through. This is the gear that they wear. This is why they come in here with all the musculoskeletal complaints that they have.
It is extremely important how you're handled and how your provider communicates with you. I feel I'm heard. I feel I'm understood. Because of that, I make appointments. I go to the doctor, you know, I make sure that I'm getting the care that I need.
It was important for us to provide this clinic for them where just women come so that they feel comfortable in the space.
There are a lot of women who want to come to a designated space for women for various reasons. One reason might be military sexual trauma history. And we need to make sure that women feel like they can come to a place where they're not going to get harassed in the same way.
It matters how we're greeted. It matters if there's eye contact. It matters that the person that is about to touch us or listen to our chest or touch our breast during an exam is handling us in a professional, delicate way.
Most of them come away saying, you know, this is not the VA that I knew years ago. This has really changed and the care is really a lot better.
As women age, it's very important that they get in for their preventative health care. And if they are wondering if they're eligible for those things or if it's time for them to get them, the best thing for them to do is talk to their primary care provider.
The VA now is not what it used to be. There are providers that care about us and care about what women go through and what our needs are. What you want is a women's facility like this everywhere.
The biggest reason I want to come here and play music and tell stories to the kids is because I was inspired by going to a concert when I was 5, and I went home and I just told my mom I wanted to play music. I've played a string instrument for 26 years. I started the viola when I went to college. I feel like every time I go and I play, I might be inspiring a child to do the same thing and get to have the nice adventure that I've had over the years of learning music. To see the joy and the smiles on the kids' faces is just completely worth it. It's by far my favorite thing I get to do.
Music can make us feel different ways, and it really has a profound effect. What kinds of sounds, what moods, what instrumentation creates certain emotional effects. It's really amazing when you think about it and experience it.
Once Upon an Orchestra, it's a series of events that we've been hosting at library branches all throughout the city. Sounds and melodies can move and change in a way that music can help us tell a story. The more opportunities we give kids to explore this and understand this and be delighted by it, the better.
I mean, you get some very interesting answers from the kids, and that's exactly what we want.
Maybe a unicorn, some kind of dinosaur.
Like a pterodactyl? We need to get on board the pterodactyl pirate ship to get our toys back.
Come on, let's hop and slither together now. We have many forms of classical music, genres, like opera obviously is one that has text and it tells you the story, but a lot of pieces do not have that, and it's so important to get kids to use their imagination to come up with one. Everything does tell a story in some way or another.
I think it's one of the purposes of music, and it's something that music can do. It can ignite people's imaginations. The kids get really excited about it. Gets those creative juices flowing, and it's exciting and fun.
Music is a universal language. You don't have to speak it to feel it. To have something, if it makes you feel a certain way, that's such a visceral situation that can really help, I think, a child develop and start to understand how to comprehend those emotions.
I play the violin. I've been playing for 25 years. I find it inspiring. It continues to reinforce things that I've been taught and keeps me engaged and excited about what I do. Passing it on and seeing the enthusiasm, especially from the kids, is great. I mean, I feed off of it.
As part of the mayor's give a day, we are constructing some walls that will be used in a Habitat home that will then be sent to West Kentucky, and it will provide much needed housing for victims of the tornadoes.
One of the events like this, it helps to make sure that all the time that people invest is really going into something that's going to change a person's life and it's going to have a meaningful impact.
What we want to do is form a community of people that enjoy being together and working on projects together and just getting out and volunteering.
As the mayor's always said, you know, we are a very compassionate city. We know how difficult it is to recover from tornadoes. So many of our members wanted to donate their time today to be able to help put some people in their homes right now.
The service factor, it not only changes the lives of the people that they're doing it for, but it changes our own lives, and it kind of helps us to kind of see what's really important.
The first part of this process is to actually do what we all do in construction, measure twice and cut once.
The crew shows up, we cut all the lumber to the sizes we need to build all the walls.
We'll stack all that up in the parking space, and then we'll have teams come in and they'll actually drive the nails and assemble the walls.
Today we're actually going to stand the house so that people can see how the house sits and how many bedrooms and kind of get a feel for the size of the structure.
building a house like we're doing right here really sends another message out to Western Kentucky. It's a nice thing to do to be able to help people. This type of work that y'all are doing is going to really bring a lot of smiles. So I just wanted to say thank you.
This builds camaraderie between one another, and everybody is so excited to do this. We'll have more than 200 people in this parking lot this afternoon constructing these walls. We'll load all of that on a truck and actually construct the house on site.
If people don't come together and kind of help lend a hand, it's going to be impossible for some of those people to fully recover. And so today is part of that recovery process. It starts here in Louisville.
Having that ability to provide them with something they've missed, it's really great to give them that opportunity to get back on their own 2 feet.
Severe weather can strike anytime, anywhere, but there's a simple way to stay safe. Hey, Jim Cantore here. I stay safe in dangerous weather by planning ahead. You can stay safe too with a few easy steps. Build an inexpensive kit with supplies for your family's needs. Write down important information like phone numbers and medications. Always talk with your family and remember any pets in your planning. Be ready, be safe. Start your plan today at ready.gov/plan.
What are you looking for?
When I was in foster care, I never knew when I would have to move, so I always had my suitcase ready to go. Then one day, I was adopted. My new parents opened their hearts and home to me. My parents cook my favorite breakfast for me every morning. My parents take me on trips I never thought I would go on. They gave me a home and an even better reason to use that suitcase. My parents aren't perfect, but they're perfect for me.
MSD, ensuring safe, clean waterways for Louisville and the surrounding region.
Metro TV will start in 1 minute.
Good afternoon. This is a continuation of the Louisville Metro Council Budget Committee meetings and hearings on the FY23 operating and capital budgets. Tonight is the first of two public hearings on the budget. We will have another public hearing on June 2nd at 6 p.m. And as with this hearing, you can sign up to speak, if you have not spoken at this one, on June 1st, the day before, from 3 to 4:30. You can also comment on the Metro budget on a comment form, which you can find on the Metro Council website. That will remain open until June 3rd at 5 p.m. We have 24 speakers who have signed up tonight. I think we actually had 25, but one has canceled. And we will take them in the order. I guess it's the order that they signed up in. We have made virtual speakers available tonight, and most of the speakers will be virtual. We have a few here at City Hall. I'll call the roll. There are many other people watching through other devices at this point, but I'm the committee chair, Bill Hollander, the vice chair, Kevin Kramer. Also in chambers, we have Councilman Piacentini and Councilwoman George. And online, we have council members Armstrong, Triplett, McCraney, Arthur, Winkler, and as I said, there are other people watching this hearing in other ways tonight. So we'll begin. People have been told what the rules are for speaking. You will be able to speak for 3 minutes. There will be a chime when you are done. If you are speaking in person, you will actually see a countdown clock up here. If you are virtual, you won't see the clock, of course, but we do ask you to wrap up very quickly when you hear the chime sound. And if you don't do that, unfortunately, I'll have the unpleasant task of asking you to wrap up, and I hope not to have to do that tonight. First speaker is Stacy Brindley, who is joining us virtually.
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, just making sure. My name is Stacy Brindley, and I run the Independence Readiness Program at Boys and Girls Haven. As all of you probably know, we've been around for 70 years, and we've been a home to disadvantaged children, serving the most severely impacted youth in the city. And we care for almost 1,000 kids a year. We serve older youth between the ages of 18 and 21 in the Independence Readiness Program, and the statistics show that after foster youth leave state's care, about 47% of foster youth are chronically unemployed, 20% are homeless, 71% of the population have jobs making less than $25,000 a year annually, and only 4% receive a college degree. At the core of all of this, our Independence Readiness Program teaches vocational skills, work with employers to help children find jobs. We partner with colleges and other schools to provide educational opportunities. And all the while, we're dealing with teaching life skills to ensure that the trauma can be dealt with effectively so that the kids are on a trajectory of success. So we serve about 100 kids a year, and you all have all done a beautiful job of supporting us. Last year, we did not get the full amount that we requested. And we recognize that other agencies are just as much in need. This year, our award was increased. And on behalf of all the staff at Boys and Girls Haven, I just wanted to come on here to say thank you so much to the council. This award allowed us to secure existing positions so that the staff can continue to offer these much needed intensive case management services. With these funds, we will continue to offer permanent housing for these young adults, paired with great paying jobs and links to the educational opportunities that they need so that they can transition into adulthood. I really just wanted to come on here to say thank you, thank you, thank you. You have no idea the good work that this decision has been made to continue to allow our kids to be successful. So I hope that you all have a wonderful night, and thank you once again.
Thank you. Catherine Mikas.
Thank you. Good evening. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak before the Budget Committee. My name is Catherine Mikas, and I'm a volunteer with Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, which is part of Every Town for Gun Safety. We're part of the gun violence prevention movement across the country. Tonight, I'm here to encourage you to continue to fully fund the Office of Safe and Healthy Neighborhoods and if possible, to see your way clear to helping them do even more. Gun violence has increased across the country in the past 2 years. Here in Louisville, we set records for homicides both in 2020 and again in 2021. This year, the LMPD has already investigated 65 homicides, which, since we're about a third of the way through the year, puts us on pace to have a really horrific total by the end of the year. Just yesterday, the two men who were the victims of the Hikes Point shooting were named, and I want to say their names so we can remember them. They are Khalil Lachman and Muhammad Abdi. So we need to take steps to change the trajectory of our city, and I want to thank you for the funding that you provided to the Office of Safe and Healthy Neighborhoods last year, the American Rescue Plan funds that you directed towards them. They have helped the office get going, and they've helped the community violence intervention programs that they support to do their work. Ocean is working with violence interrupters in several neighborhoods across the city which are particularly at risk for gun violence. Groups like Youth Build, No More Red Dots, and the hospital-based system Pivot to Peace. These organizations work with people who are at risk of violence and try to help them find a different path in their lives so that they don't end up mired in violence and don't end up being either a perpetrator or a victim. Additionally, Ocean has 10 counselors who are providing long-term case management and wraparound services for individuals who've been referred to them. A number have come from Jefferson County Public Schools. And the goal of the counselors is the same. They want to work with these people individually in order to help them change the direction of their lives and to find a way to avoid being a victim or a perpetrator of violence going forward. These sorts of violence intervention programs have been rolled out in other cities across the country, and they've been proven that they are effective at reducing shootings, excuse me, and reducing gun violence. The work of the Office of Safe and Healthy Neighborhoods is exactly the sort of effort that can reduce the flood of violence we've been experiencing over the past several years, and I'm encouraging you to fully fund the Ocean counselors and the community violence intervention organizations that they support. And if you can find your way clear to help them even a bit more, one counselor can work with 15 people, and we could certainly use more of this sort of work in our city. Thank you very much for your time, and thank you again for funding the programs in 2022.
Thank you. Rose Smith.
Good evening, my name is Rose Smith. And the essential goal of the Office for Safe and Healthy Neighborhood is to reduce gun violence in Louisville. One important way Ocean does this is by engaging Louisville residents to become involved, to become mobilized as a team for action of change. And I believe real change happens when people who need it lead it. I have personally been affected by gun violence. I lost my son, Corey Ace Crow, in 2014 to homicide. So I've been working with the Park Hill neighborhood and serve on the Oceans Community Mobilization Team in Park Hill. Our team cares about the safety and health for families and the community at large. We are passionate about helping to end gun violence where we live. And we feel that our voices mean something when we stand as a team. In the Park Hill neighborhood, we are currently wanting to install, we're working on a community peace garden. We have identified several low-light areas that only accommodate illegal activities and crime. So we will be installing solar power commercial lighting that will literally spotlight perpetrators. We're purchasing gun lots to give to civil-minded residents. And we are partnering with local organizations to offer free firearm safety training. We're buying Stop the Bleed kits to strategically place them near hotspots so that our caring neighbors and are ready, equipped to perform what could be life-saving measures on a victim. Ocean has shown us that community mobilization is essential to long-term and sustainable change in our neighborhoods. We need this funding from the Community Mobilization Initiative to help save lives and give our residents a peace of mind, knowing that they are safe in their homes and their community. This funding will make a difference to us and provide a channel for our collective voices. As someone who has worked closely with Ocean, I know of its effectiveness for change, and I'm in full support of Ocean's funding request. And I thank you for what you've done in the past, and I hope that you continue to fund an evidence-based initiative mobilization and community-based prevention measures are paramount to ending gun violence and having peace in our community. And I thank you to the everyone for allowing OSHA's funding, and I hope to continue getting your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Cindy Weber. She is here in person. If you'll move the microphone, there you go. Thank you.
I'm Reverend Cindy Weber, pastor of Jeff Street Baptist Community at Liberty, which is in the Phoenix Hill neighborhood at the corner of Shelby and Liberty Streets. For the last 35 years, our church has held a weekday morning hospitality program for homeless men and women. It's called the Day Shelter by the city. It's called the Coffee Shop by a lot of our homeless friends. Because many of our guests deal with severe mental illness and addiction, some of them are uncomfortable staying at shelters or even visiting other agencies. But because we are small and laid back and welcoming, they do visit our program. And then as they build a sense of trust through us, they are able to connect with visiting case managers and health workers from other agencies like St. John's Center, yay, Phoenix Health Center, yay, and Seven Counties, yay. Due to COVID-related safety issues, we had to start serving coffee and meals and essential items from our door, and our numbers quickly increased from 60 individuals a day to 120 to 180. Today it was 153. And we've continued to provide essential services to our guests and to connect them to other agencies. We're planning to reopen our hospitality space at the beginning of July. But in spite of the life-changing services we have provided to so many people over the last 35 years, we were not included in the city's current draft of the budget. And while our little congregation is able to pay for some of this program, and while we receive other grants and donations from here and there, like Sisters of Loretto and Kentucky Colonels and some other churches, we need city funding in order to be able to continue to do our part. And just so you know, if we're not able to do our part, other agencies will not be able to even connect to those people who come to them through us. Also, it's important for you to know that while most day shelters are set up for men or for women or for men and women, but separated, our shelter welcomes both men and women at the same time, and that means a lot to the women who count on their male partners for safety. Also, I want you to know that our hospitality program has been inclusive to the LGBTQ community for over 30 years, providing safety and welcome to persons who've had a very hard time finding that. So, Metro Council members, in order to provide the same life-changing services and a place of welcome to some of the most vulnerable people in our city that we've provided over the last 35 years, please adjust the budget to include us. Please find $50,000 so that we can continue to do our part.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Pam Darnell.
Good evening. I'm Pam Darnell, CEO at Family and Children's Place. Thank you for your time this evening. Two of our services receive EAF grants, Collaborative Learning After School Program, CLASP, and Child Advocacy Center, CAC. These are currently funded at $51,900. In the mayor's 2023 budget, it reduces our new request of $62,000 combined by $35,600. Both programs are highly effective with significant positive impact on those served. CAC provides state-mandated services available only at the CAC, including forensic medical exams, forensic interviews, multidisciplinary team, family advocacy, and court services. LMPD's Crimes Against Children's Unit and Child Protective Services are co-located there with us. These children and youth are involved in the child welfare system, are often scared and traumatized from sexual abuse, human trafficking, and violent crime they've experienced. quality CACs save nearly 50% of investigation costs and cost of services for the children and youth and families. We request that the eliminated $18,000 be returned to help fund the physician, medical exams, and other medical costs necessary to provide these services. Our class service helps youth attending Mazeek Middle School who reside in Smoketown, located in the fifth poorest zip code in Kentucky. Resource and income gaps in this neighborhood compared to our city are documented in the Louisville Health Equity Report and elsewhere. 26% of Mazeek students, double the state average, have negative behavior events resulting in out-of-school suspensions and in-school removal, and student surveys show great concerns of personal safety danger at Mazeek compared to all other district middle schools. Our school district, city, and state leaders have echoed the critical need for mental health supports in schools, and Mazeek acknowledges the need for trauma-informed and evidence-based services like our CLASP program. Youth in CLASP improve academically, behaviorally, and increase social emotional learning. If returned, the $17,600 eliminated would provide desperately needed mental health services, parent engagement that will improve students' overall mental, social, and emotional well-being. The children and youth we serve live with abuse and trauma that most of us will never, ever know. And we are grateful for the EAF support we've received over the years. We respectfully request that the CAC funding be fulfilled at $30,000 and CLASP funding be filled at $32,000. Thank you.
Thank you. Nancy Parker.
Hi, good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. My name is Nancy Parker. I'm Director of Partner Relations for Lighthouse Promise, Inc. We're doing business as Lighthouse Academy at Newburgh. We want to thank you so much for your past partnership and ask for you to reconsider external agency funding for our Partners in Learning program for 2023. We were not included in the budget this year. Lighthouse has been serving children in our out-of-school time program for 23 years. We are a completely free program providing academics, enrichment, social, emotional, and youth development programs for children ages kindergarten through eighth grade, after school, and in summer. Plus, we host a full GED and English as a second language program during the day while kids are in school. Lighthouse has been commissioned a Block Star for a participant of the United Community. We are partners with the Face It program to wipe out child abuse in Louisville, and we meet all 2020 Better Business Bureau charity accountability standards. We are a JCPS learning hub. And again, all of our programs serve students at absolutely no charge. Lighthouse serves students currently from 18 JCPS schools, a few private schools, and some students who are now homeschooled. Our program offers homework assistance 4 nights a week with special emphasis on reading, science, technology, engineering, and math. We have exceeded the Metro Louisville out-of-school time quality standards. And during these evenings, we also offer enrichment activities such as dance training, vocal music, piano, keyboard, violin lessons, drama, art instruction, karate, puppetry, photography, and more. We partner with other organizations such as Family and Children's Place for roundtable mental health services and Looking for Lilith for anti-bullying services. We are data-driven and have proven success over the past 23 years. We have past students who come back and acknowledge how much Lighthouse Academy at Newburgh became a trajectory for positive change in their lives. The document that I sent and uploaded includes this data plus some testimonials and some photos. For the first time, we are looking at a year without any partnership with Metro Louisville. This will be detrimental to our students and families, as it could mean pausing programs, cutting students and staff, and overall negatively impacting the students, families, and schools we serve. This comes at a time when these children are more at need than ever academically and mentally. We opened our doors to serve students in person during the pandemic during NTI, and we continue to pivot to help our students become successful adults. We hire past students to work in our summer program as mentors to current students. All of these things are in jeopardy without any funding from Metro Louisville External Agency Funds. Every dollar counts at Lighthouse Promise, Inc., and we ask that you reconsider funding for 2023 and add our students and family needs into your budget by supporting our Partners in Learning program. Thank you again for your past support and your consideration for the future.
Thank you. And there was a reference to some materials that were submitted. Those are attached to the agenda for all to see. Brandon Hill.
Yes, good evening. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Hey, my name is Brandon Hill, and I'm a member of the Office for Safe and Healthy Neighborhoods inaugural Capacity Building Fellowship Cohort. I'm also the founder of Reviving Urban Neighborhoods, which is a nonprofit whose mission is to revive the urban community by generating and supporting various opportunities that embody community enhancement. One way that we do this, one example of this is like we have a league called the Run League where we have 18 to 35 year old males that sign up from all different neighborhoods, and we encourage peace. And then we also bring in and partner with organizations that provide resources such as mental health, financial literacy, job recruitment, educational resources, things such as record expungement and more. We've gotten young men college opportunities and full scholarships, jobs and education on all type of resources that are available for them in the community. And it's not just for the participants, but for the people that attend as well. So on average, sometimes we'll have between 300 to 700 people in the community in the urban demographic that are there that are getting educated. And we like to use that as a form of violence prevention, you know, to link people with the resources that they need so that they don't have to go out in the street and get in violent situations. We also use that to cut down on recidivism. And we link ex-offenders to resources, people that have those resources that can help them and establish way of life. One of the things that reason why I do this is because I love the city. As a former coach at Central High School, I've seen some youth that I've coached and in other things as a volunteer at the Boys and Girls Club in my past, where you hate to see youth and young adults that get into the streets and that they lose their lives at a young age. A lot of competent grassroots service providers maximize impact by leveraging resources that encourages even, you know, the loneliest of communities to mobilize. Unfortunately, you know, a lot of local governments have not always prioritized funding to small community-based organizations. Outside of us, there are a lot of grassroots nonprofits that have to compete for private funds from larger organizations that may be less invested in their community. The lack of investment, training, and technical assistance means many smaller but viable nonprofits can't sustain. I've seen this happen with us and several other former community partners. Fortunately, the Office of Safe and Healthy Neighborhoods have provided my organization and nine other grassroots organizations the earnesty to work in save human lives. Through this organization, we get useful training and technical assistance in fundraising, board management, strategic planning, financing, budgeting, and more. This needed financial support will ensure that all 10 of us will continue to contribute to violence prevention for many years. So as a personal testimony.
Mr. Hill, if you'll wrap up your comments, I'm sorry, your time has expired.
Okay. So I just ask that you all offer this opportunity by continuing to fund OCEAN.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nancy Cavalcanti.
Good evening, council members. I'm Nancy Cavalcanti, and I live in District 26. I'm appalled. I'm appalled at the mayor's proposal of $220 million to LMPD, an organization that includes a large amount of funding that supports the increasing tech-driven surveillance of our communities. This increased presence targets individuals before they've committed a crime and cultivates an over-policing of our communities that disproportionately impacts Black, Brown, and poor residents of Louisville. This sidesteps our collective community call to divert police funding to alternate sources. I urge you to listen to your constituency. If OMB is projecting a deficit of $70 million for 2024 and another $100 million for 2025, we should not be expanding technologies and surveillance contracts which disproportionately target these neighborhoods. The data also tells us that the use of this technology, like ShotSpotter, is racist, expensive, and useless. While out canvassing recently, I met a gentleman who has a ShotSpotter on a pole right outside his house. So when I asked him how he felt about the use of this technology in his community, he responded by telling me that it only served to bring the police to the neighborhood, not to prevent crime, but to be an undesired presence. He told me this does not provide public safety for his family or community, but instead brings an unwarranted and negative police presence right to his door. I urge the council not to accept the mayor's proposal to allocate $220 million to LMPD that upholds a culture of surveillance and occupation of our most marginalized neighborhoods. This is an increase of $25 million over last year. Remember, they already got $23.5 million from ARP funds. You also gave them neighborhood development funds and capital infrastructure funds as well. There are many institutions and services that you've even heard from tonight in our communities that could be expanded with this $25 million. Let's spend this money on more peaceful services such as food justice, reproductive justice, housing security, houseless security, education programs for our children and youth, public transportation, mental health services, just to name a few. The list of needs is great, and the opportunities are there for change in our city. Louisville's experiencing a crisis, one both of underfunding and overfunding. Our critical services are consistently, as we've heard, underfunded, while institutions like the police and prisons are continuously given exorbitant budgets to fund new technology that will supposedly alleviate violence and keep people safer. However, we know and data proves that these technologies do not prevent gun violence and instead increase police presence in Black, brown, and poor neighborhoods. This city can improve the lives of its residents, but we have to invest in our people instead of the police. Now's the time. Be bold. Do something new. Thank you.
Thank you. Tarana Browder.
Thank you for allowing me to speak to you today about OSHN. The Office for Safe and Healthy Neighborhoods, first shout out to the whole outreach team and my case manager, Ms. Connie Cherry, who helped me. When the road got rough and I was going down the wrong way, she helped me. She has also helped others I know, people my age and also grown people in so many ways. Changed my way of thinking from negative to positive. My actions changed from negative to positive. Now I know violence is just like COVID, very contagious. Learning peace and giving others options to do better and better is needed. Case managers, more like friend, mentor, people who care and show you they care is what they do. I'm proof and my friends are proof. OSHN is changing lives. I'm 17, about to be 18 on June 1st. I'm going to nursing school, graduate high school early, and I work in the nursing field. OSHN didn't give up on me. Don't give up on OSHN. Ms. Connie and her supervisor didn't give up on me, so I'm here to say don't give up on OSHN. They are changing lives and saving lives every day. Superheroes don't have to wear a cape. Thank you.
Thank you. Jared Randall.
How y'all doing? Somebody lives in the neighborhood. I'm not a professional public speaker, so I'm just trying to get ball field lights for the kids at South Central Park. Right now, the parents are using the headlights. I'm trying to bring the new PAL program, expand it to South Central Park, and funding for that, and maybe a play day with different sports in South Central Park and different parks around Teller Berry neighborhood where I live. I'm trying to get a floating park ranger for different parks in the Teller Berry neighborhood to make the parks safer for kids. I think the park should be a safe zone for kids to play sports. I believe that sports promote a healthy lifestyle for kids and adults, and I think the park should be safer. Right now, the city of Louisville as a whole has no park rangers. They have two park ambassadors with no police powers. And I think that should be looked at. I'm also asking at some point in the future that somebody looks into putting something positive on that section of Algonquin Parkway, 7th Street Road, if you go down to 7th and Berry, because right now it's just bar, liquor store, bar, liquor store, bar, liquor store. And you look right across the street from some of them, you see apartments with kids living in them. And they're not just bars. I'm sure all y'all know what they are. There's 7 or 10 of them. And I'm not against those. I'm just against so many being in one area. And nothing positive for kids right there. I'm sure y'all would not want that on your street, just how I feel. Mostly, I'm just here putting up for kids in Taylor Berry neighborhood. And if anybody has any questions about that, I'd be around, and you can reach me on email. Thank you all for y'all's time.
Thank you. Jeff Cavalcanti.
Thank you. Let's go ahead and get the collective bargaining agreement out of the way for LMPD that has the no layoff clause. If we're heading towards a $70-100 million deficit, no agency with a no layoff clause should be hiring people. They should right now be on a hiring freeze. But it was a police investigation. They gathered evidence, turned it over to Commonwealth, to grand jury. Citations came down. Grand jury indictment came down. Felony theft, organized crime was the charges being dealt with. Turns out there were 6 police officers. 2019, 2020, 21, 22. 4 years on administrative reassignment, being paid before they pled guilty to criminal charges. One is still waiting for his trial. He held out for a trial and to do the plea deal. He's on, as far as I know, they're all police officers still. All pled guilty to crimes that they could not get onto the police force if they had them prior. $25 million, LMPD needs to clean their house, clean up, before we give them any more money. The Civilian Review and Accountability Board. We need to give them the money they need to get set up and right. They already got kneecapped with the subpoena issue. $25 million would go a long way to getting them set up and running. It was a body camera, Baxter Avenue. The call was a man had a knife. He was cutting himself. Clearly a psychotic episode. 3 police officers showed up. As they de-escalated, they circled him around and around, would step in and say, put the knife down, round and round. It was like a wounded caribou with wolves hunting them. Finally, the person quit cutting themselves and they went for the police officer. Bam, executed in the street. $25 million, that's the worst case scenario of deflection program, right there. If you're gonna send somebody out to handle a psychotic episode, they need to have the resources and the training to handle it and not just end up shooting the person. $25 million would go a long way for that. Finally, you heard everything so far, and you're going to hear more about all the agencies, all the neighborhood missions and stuff that have lost money, that have been cut out of this budget. That would go a long way, putting the money there instead. Thank you.
Thank you. Aaron Williams.
Good evening. My name is Aaron Williams, a small business owner in the Russell neighborhood. I'm here with the Office of Safe and Healthy Neighborhoods. Work effortlessly to reduce gun violence in Louisville. One key way Ocean does this is by engaging Louisville residents to become involved, to become mobilized as a team for action and change. Me, as a Shawnee graduate, violence is a very personal issue. I've witnessed a close friend of mine lose his life to gun violence, and since then, I've been working with the Russell neighborhood. I serve on Ocean's community mobilization team in the Shawnee neighborhood. Our team cares about the safe and healthy of their families, their neighbors, and the community at large. We are passionate about helping to end gun violence where we live, and we relish that our voices mean something when we stand together. We analyze and customize neighborhood-specific prevention plans to ensure that they are genuinely effective and sustainable for our neighborhood. And when we talk, people listen. Through crime prevention, through environmental design training for Ocean, we've gotten the tools we need. Ocean gives a robust training and crime prevention strategies. For example, we've pinpointed where the most serious crimes occur, and we work to service the gaps in those glaring areas. We are using the initial seed money currently to supply food for pantries for summer programs, with a special attention on the lack of food for some kids out of school in the summer programs in the Shawnee neighborhood. We're also purchasing gun locks to give civic-minded residents, and we are partnering with local organizations to offer free firearm safety training. We've also purchased Stop the Bleed kits and placed them strategically near hotspots so that neighbors are equipped with the tools that they need to perform life-saving measures on the victim if needed. Ocean has shown us that the community mobilization is essential to long-term and sustainable change in our neighborhood. We need this funding from the Community Mobilization Initiative to help save lives and give our residents peace of mind on it that they are safe in their homes. This funding will make a difference to us and provide a channel for our collective voices. As someone who has worked closely with OSHA and knows the effectiveness for long change, and also a Shawnee graduate, I am in full support of OSHA's funding request. We thank you for the previous funding, and we also thank you in advance for whatever future funding it is that we receive. As a concerned, involved citizen, I am committed to making peace and justice mean something in my community, so I'm calling on you to do the same by giving your full support to Ocean's full funding request. Thank you all.
Thank you. Jordan Boykin.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, sir, we can hear you.
All right. Well, good evening. Thank you for allowing me a few minutes to speak. Again, my name is Jordan Boykin. I am a personal trainer, I am a loan officer, and I am also an ambassador for One Love Louisville in the Office of Safe and Healthy Neighborhood. Even though I'm not from Louisville, this place has become my home. I'm a military brat, so I grew up, I bounced around a lot of different places. And I come from a single-parent home, no money, extremely lucky to have a few individuals in my life that helped guide me and gave me a sense of community, and basically helped me to use what talents I did have to help create a better life for myself than the path that I was on. I know the obstacles you face when you have no money, you have no access to facilities, you have no access to people that care about you, and that feeling of isolation. I believe it's a huge factor in what can lead somebody to either making a decision that ends in violence versus to a decision that ends in peace for everybody involved if you feel like you're a part of the community. This is why I believe that supporting not only the projects 42, 43, and 44, the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, the Down Payment Assistance Program, and the Home Funds, but also increased funding for Ocean is very important because not only like home ownership, building a neighborhood, building a community is one of the most tried and true methods of building personal and generational wealth, but also just building a better, healthier, safer community overall. Preventing violence, I believe you don't have to invest in as much in responding to violence, which you see with the police budget. One of the things I left our training from was better equipped at how to recognize violence, how to better de-escalate arguments, identify those situations of domestic violence, and to organize better in our community. I was inspired to join the Big Brothers Big Sisters Club, and to my understanding, OSHN has trained nearly 700 Louisville residents to date, And if we can build a bigger community and connect more people who are inspired to help influence change, I believe that's going to be much more beneficial. Again, amen, investing in preventing the violence as opposed to responding to it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Crystal McElroy.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear
you. Good evening. My name is Crystal McElroy, and I'm a school counselor at Maryhurst Academy, which is an all-girls state agency school within JCPS. We serve anywhere between 60 to 80 girls, grade levels 6 through 12. Mostly all of them have had some type of traumatic experience and have been placed into state's custody, waiting for either foster care or being able to go back into a safe and healthy environment. But during this school year, I had the privilege of collaborating with Evolve 502 Scholarship Liaison, and she was very accessible for our students at Maryhurst Academy. She had a wealth of knowledge and utilized it through providing information and resources that our students greatly needed. She visited our campus on different occasions to provide individual as well as group assistance our girls in completing the Evolve 502 scholarship application. She also answered any questions our students had and offered guidance on their post-secondary needs. This was major, and it was very beneficial to our girls to have this opportunity and the information. The Evolve 502 scholarship program is truly a game changer, not only for the girls at Maryhurst, but for students throughout JCPS. It has truly changed the trajectory of many of the students who had no idea on how they would be able to meet the financial obligations of attending college. Students having a great opportunity such as the Evolve 502 scholarship, it will allow them more access to a better career path for their future, along with building a better, safe, and a more equitable environment. Thank you so much for funding the Evolve 502 scholarship program, and we hope that the initiative continues. Thanks.
Thank you. Gary Friedman.
Good evening. Thank you all for your time. I know you have a lot to consider, a lot of great, passionate messages that are being shared. I'm the CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters of Kentuckiana, and I thank you all for your past support and certainly your continued support. A little bit about Big Brothers Big Sisters of Kentuckiana, I want to give a shout out to Jordan Boykin, who just spoke a couple of people ago. I'm so thrilled that he has become a big, and you hear his passion for prevention of youth violence. We are all over that prevention of youth violence. 99% of the young people we work with stay out of the juvenile justice system. Let me repeat that. 99% stay out of the juvenile justice system. We're also in the health and wellness area. 89% of the young people that we surveyed last year indicated their mental health was equal to or better than it was the year before because they're part of our program. Education. 96% of the young adults that we work with that are ready to graduate high school graduate on time, 96%. This Saturday, we're recognizing 45 of our graduates of high school that have been littles in our program. We're in child abuse prevention. Every child that we work with has eyes and ears looking at those relationships to make sure that there's nothing going on there. And we're in workforce development. You all have specifically funded our school to work program, which is for our high school age kids, and also the work we do in the Newburgh community. Newburgh is one of many zip codes that we serve throughout the community. And so all of this leads to what we're trying to do, which is help our young people in this community that need us more than they've ever needed us in the past. And while we appreciate the support, there is a whole lot more work to be done. We have about 600 families currently on our wait list just in the Louisville area that are looking for support. And rather than have them wait for us to get a mentor, we are now actively being proactive in those families and finding out what their needs are and helping them in those areas. And because of that, literally parents are being moved to tears because there's finally an organization that is reaching out and connecting with them and helping them with them. And that's Big Brothers Big Sisters of Kentuckiana. in talking to my colleagues around the country, while we appreciate the support that comes from our city government, other communities that are doing much better in violence prevention are working closer with their cities and getting more funding than we're currently getting. So if we're going to really look at violence prevention, and I'm calling out right now the Office of Safe and Healthy Neighborhoods, I've heard passionate things about them. I have reached out multiple times to try to collaborate and work together to help our young people. And so I'm asking, invite you all, let's figure out a way and all come together and talk about how we can work together so the funding that the city is giving each of our organizations makes 1 + 1 = 4 or 5, not 2. Thank you.
Thank you. Carol Jones.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, my name is Tiara Jones. I'm speaking on behalf of my mom, Carol Jones. Earlier this year, my brother was murdered, and this tragedy destroyed our family. I just want to thank Ocean for entering our lives. I want to thank Ms. Shahid and Kenneth for going the extra mile to help us with all our needs. Ocean needs funding to continue to help families like us. Ocean has changed my life in so many ways. They've showed me they've cared. Ms. Shahid has went beyond her job to be here to support my mom, especially and talk with her. She's also praying for us and our family, and she's been a blessing to our lives. Thank you.
Thank you. Sean Mucker.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Good evening. My name is Sean Mucker. I am a proud One Love Louisville ambassador with Ocean. I'm also on the board of directors with Sponsor for Success, where we do crowdfunding to help young adults and kids be able to go to educational, athletics, training camps within the community. Violence has affected me personally in the Park Hill neighborhood where I live. My experience has inspired me to take more of an active role in being a true change maker for the violence reduction. The reason why I'm motivated to help because I have saved a young man's life that was shot in my community. During my ambassador's training, I met with residents, judges, elected officials, and community leaders and advocates. All of us agree that the violence must stop, and it must stop now. I believe that we each left our training better equipped to know how to prevent conflict, de-escalate an argument, identify domestic violence, and to organize in our communities to provide emergency life-saving measures to victims of gun violence. excuse me. And to this date, Ocean has trained 700 Louisville residents, and I want to see the opportunity for this to be available in every corner of our community. So we need to continue to invest in Ocean, and it's essential. I am a full supporter of Ocean's funding request. I am a physical, emotionally moved in knowing that our city counts on people like me to step up and do the work that makes a lasting difference. As a concerned citizen, I made a commitment to be a part of the solution. I'm asking you to do the same. Invest in Ocean Ambassadors Training is investing in Louisville's biggest and most reliable asset, and this is the people. Your funding shows that you believe in me and the other 700 ambassadors. We are capable and ready to offer the good of ourselves and make Louisville more smart, more cohesive, and violence-free. Thank you for allowing me to speak. You have a great day.
Thank you. Kim and Caitlin Miller.
Hi, I'm Kim Miller. I am Caitlin's mom, and she is here with me today to talk about how the Evolve 502 scholarship has impacted our family. Caitlin is a student with learning differences, and she was able to receive the Evolve 502 scholarship by graduating from a JCPS high school. We are fairly new to Louisville. We've been here about 4 years now. And when I first heard about this, I thought, wow, this is such a great opportunity for our family. We were unsure of where Caitlin would go to college or what that would look like for her. And with the Evolve 502 scholarship, it's made it really nice for her to transition into post-secondary education. She is hopeful to stay here in the community and give back to Louisville. And I'm also a JCPS educator. I strongly believe in public education. And what I see with this scholarship is that it just creates opportunities for all students. Everyone can benefit from a scholarship, but as we know, oftentimes they're rewarded only to those who are at the top, you know, the highest achieving or the ones who write the best essays. And with Evolve 502, it's different. It kind of levels the playing field. And I think that's important for our community and our students, as it was for Caitlin. As I'm sitting here today and hearing all these passionate pleas and stories, I am so touched. And I believe that education can really change the trajectory of our city and just give everyone more opportunities that they may not have otherwise had due to financial situations or even just our economy. As we know, students come out with a large amount of debt, and that can often hinder post-secondary education. So we are very thankful for the Evolve 502 scholarship. Caitlin is thriving at JCTC. We're so excited about that, and it's going very well. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you to Caitlin. Congratulations also. Elizabeth Wessels Martin.
Good evening, council members, and thank you for this opportunity to speak. I'm Elizabeth Wessels Martin, CEO at the Center for Women and Families. We are the only service provider for victims of domestic, intimate partner, and sexual violence in Louisville, Jefferson County. And we provide our services 24/7, 365 days a year, and we are located in District 4. Each year, we serve more than 8,000 victims and families in Jefferson County, Louisville area. And in 2022, it will not be any different. In fact, we expect to exceed that number. I'm here tonight to ask that two staff positions, the Children's Advocate and the Crisis Response Advocate, be fully funded. In this year's city budget, the Children's Advocate position and the Crisis Response position have been cut by 60%. I am also going to make a bold ask and ask for an additional crisis response position be funded at $28,900, and I'll explain why. The crisis response advocates who work in the call center are the individuals on the front lines that answer the crisis calls 24/7. They are the individuals who answer the calls when victims are fearing for their lives, because we know and we hear the perpetrator screaming in the background and trying to break down the door as victims are absolutely terrified. They are the staff that safety plan with victims. They coordinate the relocation of victims and families so that they can get to a safe place in another town. They connect victims to resources and bring them into our shelter or a safe hotel where they can feel safe and get the resources that they need. Our crisis response advocates also respond to all the emergency room calls when a domestic violence or sexual assault victim is at the emergency room and is in need of support services. And the crisis response staff make sure that our hospital advocates are dispatched to those hospitals in response. They take the calls from LMPD when a victim screens in as high lethality, and they do so much more to support victims, families, and this entire community. Last year, our crisis response advocates answered 7,581 calls, and this year we are on course answer much more than that. Sadly, as we are aware, Jefferson County is seeing a significant increase in domestic violence related homicides. As of this past Sunday, we now have 9 domestic violence related homicides, and in the entire year of 2021, we had 10. So unfortunately, I think we can all see where this is headed. Our crisis response staff are the lifeline to so many men and women in our community. I can't even imagine how we will do the work with less staff. This fiscal year, like so many other nonprofits in the community, we will not be receiving the unrestricted Metro United Way money. Last year was the last year for that, since their process has gone to an RFP. Our largest federal grant, Victims of Crime Acts, will also be cut by 20%. And I know other nonprofits are being hit by that as well as Metro government. So as you can see, the impact of losing positions to answer crisis calls will have a major impact on this community, the citizens of our community, and the ability to safety plan and save lives. So I hope that you will think very long and hard about this decision to cut funding to the Center for Women and Families. Thank you and have a good evening.
Thank you. Lori Bodiger. And I may have not pronounced that correctly.
It's perfect. Hardy. Good evening, council members and fellow Louisville citizens. I'm delighted to be here tonight and to be listening to my fellow nonprofit leaders and participants share all the wonderful things that are happening here in Louisville to try to mitigate some of the difficult things. My name is Lori Bodiger. You got it spot on. I am the head of school of the DePaul School. The DePaul School is in the Highlands. We're on Duker Street, and we are in our 52nd year of serving children with learning differences. That typically means the kids have dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, ADHD. 20% of society has these learning differences. That means one of five children and one of five adults. When you think of that statistically, and you look at the people who are doing dynamic things in the world, many of them have alternative thinking patterns. They have these learning differences, but they had to strive to survive childhood. Many of the children, before they come to us, they and their families are told that they are apathetic, they don't try, and they just aren't strong learners. That couldn't be further from the truth. These kids are brilliant. They are MIT, they say the MIT disease is dyslexia. It really does work. But what the kids with these learning differences need is alternative teaching. We do that really well on Duker Street at the DePaul School. So I thank the council for committing some of the funding, $12,000, toward making sure that kids across more than the 42 zip codes that we already serve can attend our summer program. We have a math program and we have an English language arts program. With the right teaching, these kids really thrive. They are bright, they're talented, they want to do well, as do their families. We truly understand the intersectionality of a learning difference combined with lower income, and those two things make it incredibly complicated. So again, I thank the council for knowing that our program can serve more children. We will put proof in the pudding after this summer and then hopefully be back for more for both summer program and the school year. We want to see every child in the Kentuckiana area, the 20%, get the teaching that they need. I thank you and I appreciate the invitation to speak this evening.
Thank you. Tony Curtis.
Good evening. I'm feeling really inspired by people's talks this evening. I am Tony Curtis, the Executive Director of the Metropolitan Housing Coalition, a coalition of 300 individual and organizational members. I'm here tonight to speak on MHC external agency funding and affordable housing in relation to the proposed budget. MHC strengthens, unites, and mobilizes private and public resources to provide fair, accessible, and affordable housing for everyone in our Louisville community. Together, we show up for attainable housing for all. While the proposed budget funds many important housing initiatives, including $10 million for the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, $3 million for down payment assistance to create homeownership opportunities, and while partner organizations receive funding to support important housing programs, MHC was not included in this proposed budget. This was funding that MHC requested for the Furthering Affordable and Integrated Residence and Revitalization, the FAIR program, that addresses a range of issues associated with ensuring that Louisville residents have access to safe, stable, and affordable housing in all areas of Louisville. MHC's role is unique in the community, as it is a united voice for fair and affordable housing. We hope you join us in seeing this funding decision as an oversight, especially when affordable housing and homelessness have been identified as the leading issues to be addressed in two recent community surveys. and a conversation MHC has been leading for over 30 years. MHC's FAIR program would support MHC to conduct and publish research to better understand housing opportunities and utilize this research to advocate with policymakers and to educate the community about critical needs of housing, to advocate for land development code reform by removing barriers to creating housing opportunity and choice across all of Louisville, through providing data to inform recommendations, ensuring process accountability, and educating the community through presentations and a learning series, to intervene in rate cases before the Kentucky Public Service Commission on behalf of low and fixed income households in order to create equitable, affordable, and accessible energy and water utilities, and to expand funding for affordability programs such as ASAP and Winter Help. A lot of this work is done in partnership with Louisville Metro, and there is a lot of work that MHC does to keep Louisville Metro accountable and informed on fair and affordable housing policy issues. Both of these are important reasons for MHC to exist, to be a collective voice, and to do the work each and every day of the year. This work is not possible without a diverse coalition of funders through members, foundations, businesses, and local and state government. With an ever-increasing reliance on our nonprofit community, EAF is an important piece of this funding puzzle. The need has only increased, and the funding has unfortunately gone the opposite direction. So let us commit today to growing that pot of money as we move forward. We ask today that you reconsider MHC's request of $22,000 for fiscal year 23 budget, and at the very least consider continuing MHC's funding at the fiscal year 22 level of $13,300. Thank you for considering this request.
Thank you. Rebecca Frederick.
Good evening, council members. My name is Rebecca and I live in District 9. The mayor has proposed an astounding $220 million to LMPD for the fiscal year 2022-2023. And this will include a large amount of funds that support an ever-increasing surveillance and supervision of our communities. The steady increase of tech-driven and data-driven practices presents in our community as a broad net of surveillance and supervision that targets individuals before a crime is committed and creates over-policing of our communities that disproportionately impacts Black, Brown, and poor members of our community. LMPD uses surveillance technologies and programs that require ongoing contracts and consistent upgrade costs with for-profit corporations. Data from the city shows that these tools and programs are also used disproportionately and often exclusively in Black, Brown, and poor neighborhoods of Louisville. Some of these programs and tools will directly support a future of heavy predictive policing that targets community members through mathematical algorithms, geographical mapping, and data-driven decisions that rely heavily on biased data collection and racist tools and technologies. I urge the council to look into how much money is wasted every year on these technologies and programs, such as some of the following. ShotSpotter gun detection, Flock license plate readers, the MetroWatch camera system, the GVI program, and the ever-continuing growing real-time crime center. If the mayor's proposal is accepted as it's written now, OMB is projecting a massive deficit in the coming years of $70 million and then $100 million. One department that it is clear you could pull back from is LMPD. And the mayor's proposal of $220 million to be allocated to LMPD is an increase of $25 million compared to last year. On top of that proposed budget bump, LMPD was also given $23.5 million from ARP funds that are going to be used towards implementing an increase of data-driven practices that came from the Hillard-Hines Review, and they will all require ongoing contracts and consistent upgrade costs. And these extra federal funds and large amounts of the operating and capital funds will not be around in years to come. So I came prepared tonight with a list of things for you to go to invest this money into instead of LMPD, but I think it's pretty clear that the community already has plenty of these services and they are begging you for this money, and they beg you for this money every year. And I think it's truly shameful that as a compassionate city, we would even consider throwing $220 million at a police force that is corrupt and deep in fraud, and you're not giving it to these community-based organizations that are right here in front of you now. So I'm asking the council to divest from these clear paths of over-policing and state surveillance that's impacting the health and well-being of Black, Brown, and poor community members, and to invest into life-giving resources that are desperately needed. More money to police does not equate to less crime. It simply equates to more police presence in our communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Quintina McDowell.
Hello, can you all hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great evening. My name is Quintina McDowell. I am with PCC Incorporated Project Community Center here in Louisville, Kentucky. We were not recommended for the grant this year. However, I do want to thank you all for granting us the EAF for last year. For our tutoring program, as well as our dance and music program as well. I am coming before you to ask for reconsideration for our housing program with PCC. We have a PCC HP program, which is Project Community Center Housing Program, and we are servicing the homeless youth here in Louisville, Kentucky. We had two homes that was donated to us by a family member of mine. Free and clear of debt, we need to renovate those homes. We are opening those homes up to the homeless youth, which there is a huge need for homelessness in the city of Louisville. We have partnered with Goodwill. We have created a curriculum for the homeless youth. This program will consist of a short-term, like two-year transitional program, where we'll be able to provide resources for the homeless youth to help them get on their feet, also to help them with career opportunities, health and wellness, job opportunities, rental assistance, as well as any other life skills that they may need as well. Our mission is to decrease the percentage of homelessness in Louisville community housing and supportive services. In the state of Kentucky, there have been significant increase in the number of residents who are experiencing homelessness. The demographics of these individuals include veterans, individuals, and families. Due to the current national health crisis, the number of resources available has decreased compared to when it first began. The financial resources that were available at the start of the pandemic have dissipated over the last year. There is a need for more subsidy programs and transitional housing resources that can assist in the load of individuals and families who may have been struggling before the pandemic and now cannot provide basic human needs such as water, food, shelter. The schools and daycares closures have significantly impacted single-family homes who do not have the support of extended family to assist with the care of dependents. This impacts job security, which then decreases the amount of income single parents and individuals are bringing home. And Kentucky has been drastically impacted compared to surrounding states with larger population. Our program would also consist of Our program would also consist of budgeting and financial literacy workshops, home ownership workshops, job readiness, utility assistance with applications, completions, and health and wellness workshops as well.
Ms. McDowell, your time has expired. If you'll please wrap up.
Okay, I apologize. Thank you. So we are asking that that you all reconsider our program, and that we are asking for at least $50,000 to be able to renovate these homes so that we can get the homeless youth in our transitional program. Thank you.
Thank you. Caitlin Selman.
All right, you can hear me?
Yes, we can.
Cool. Good evening, council and community members. My name is Dr. Caitlin Selman, and I'm a resident of District 15. Today, I'd like to address the council about the proposed budget, specifically, as others have mentioned, for LMPD for this fiscal year. Like some of those before me have stated, I too am appalled by the mayor's proposal of $220 million to LMPD in general. In particular, this budget includes a large amount of funds that supports increasing tech-driven surveillance in our communities, including but not limited to ShotSpotter. These police technologies uphold intelligence-led policing through data-driven practices and tools. An increase in technology and data-driven surveillance in our cities operates as a broad net of surveillance, targeting individuals before they've committed a crime and cultivating an over-policing of our communities, especially Black, Brown, and poor residents. This also sidesteps our collective community call to actually divert police funding to alternate sources, like many of those that have been mentioned here, OCEAN, church programs for houseless people, Big Brothers Big Sisters, and education. This is something that as a university professor and as a parent of a two-year-old who's watching Monster Jam right now, I feel strongly about. He will hopefully, maybe, enter JCPS in the coming years, depending on what the educational landscape looks like here. The question when people request funds is often, where will we get that money? Well, with the money we pour into policing, we could easily fund these systems. Instead of criminalizing and occupying whole neighborhoods, we could be funding things like after-school programs or early childhood learning, increasing the pay for daycare workers, offering more funding for low-income families, and creating college funds for young Louisvillians. Instead of making leaders in these initiatives, like you've heard today, fight for this money from multiple and precarious funding streams. As I said, I'm a university professor, and specifically I have a PhD in criminology and criminal justice. So I can also assure you that investing in universal childcare and quality public education now is a sound crime prevention policy. It's also fiscally responsible. Studies have shown that well-funded childcare and education leads to positive outcomes later in life in terms of educational performance and job attainment. And that feeds directly into decreased involvement with the juvenile and criminal justice systems. As Nancy and Rebecca specifically mentioned, Louisville is experiencing a crisis, one of both underfunding and overfunding. Our critical services are consistently underfunded, while institutions like the police and prisons are continuously given exorbitant budgets to fund new technology in the hopes that it will alleviate violence and keep people safer. But policing does not keep people safe, no matter how emphatically we say that it does, and no matter how much money we throw at it. In particular, these data-driven technologies empirically do not prevent gun violence. And instead, they increase police presence in Black, Brown, and poor neighborhoods. This city, I believe, can improve the lives of its residents, but we have to invest in our people instead of the police, and we have to listen to the people closest to and most informed on these issues. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And I believe that concludes everyone who has signed up to speak. Again, we will have another public hearing on June 2nd at 6 o'clock for people who have not spoken at one of these hearings, and for organizations that have not been represented. You can sign up for that on June 1st from 3 to 4, and the comment form will remain open on June 3rd until 5 p.m. And you can find all of this on the Metro Council Clerk, Metro Council and Metro Council Clerk website. Thank you. Without objection, we're adjourned.